Hi everyone, my name's Az. I'm the CMO for Merkle EMEA, where we work with some of the best brands in the world to transform their customer experiences. We've got some great speakers lined up for you today. Welcome to our podcast discussing all the things that you need to deliver customer experience management. This is Connected.
Hi everyone, my name is Mark Clydesdale. I'm VP in Progress and Transformation, and I lead our transformation practice area over in the UK. Today I'm joined by my colleagues Sarah and Neil, and I think you'd just both like to introduce yourself, please. So Neil, over to you.
Thanks, Mark. My name is Neil Westlake-Guy. I'm a VP in Transformation. My focus and experience mostly in financial services on client side has all been about bringing people, data, technology together to focus on customer value for organisations and for their customers.
And Sarah?
Hello, my name is Sarah Hind. I'm a director in the transformation team. I come from a client-side background. I spent 20 years working in aviation. My main sort of focus was around agile ways of working and how you enable companies to have agility and act with agility and to be more adaptable.
And today we want to talk about the cost of companies not transforming. And while that can maybe sound like a slightly negative title, I think we really want to kind of focus on keeping this upbeat and understanding what it is that's kind of holding clients back and just taking a slightly different view on why the need for transformation is so strong. So I suppose my first question to kind of kick off the conversation is, why do we feel that so many of our clients and wider businesses are kind of hesitating or stalling on their transformation initiatives?
I think there are a multitude of reasons, to be honest, but probably three spring to mind. I think one of the most obvious is that clients get so tied up in business as usual. Publicly listed companies, focused on hitting those ever-increasing targets, often with decreasing headcount or ever-increasing efficiency goals as well. I think secondly, it can often just feel too big, too scary in a matrixed organization. It can be often, working with a client at the moment, it can often feel difficult to focus on where the broader value opportunities are and to do that in an unconstrained way when you're constantly faced with so many kind of organizational, data, technology, even regulatory barriers. And I think thirdly, the simple one, which is people don't then think about what the opportunity cost of not transforming is, and that doesn't come into the consideration. So those would be my opening thoughts.
I think for me there's also a little bit of transformation fatigue. A lot of companies have been through a lot of previous transformations and they haven't necessarily always landed. And therefore you're asking people to go through another transformation and kind of what makes it different from previous attempts.
And I suppose we do work with lots of big and long standing clients, right? These are the ones that are maybe finding it harder to start their transformation journey and arguably have the highest opportunity cost of not transforming. Because it's the new players coming in that are nimble and quick that are part of the reason that this is needed and aren't needing to steer an elephant, for want of a better analogy, and change, as you say, all of this BAU working within a behemoth of an organization with thousands of people and lots of different departments. But therein, I think this is one of the areas that is so key. I don't think customers compare a business only to businesses of its like. And so we might work with banks and the banks might be thinking about how well they deliver a customer experience against the other banks. But customers' expectations of any brand is changing from all of these new kind of nimble players coming in, and there's no patience anymore for whether it's their supermarket or their bank or their telco provider. It doesn't really matter how big they are and how long they've been around. If they're not able to treat the customer as an individual and be more personal to them, the patience and tolerance of that is no longer there.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, Mark, because I think, again, when you tie that with some of the legacy infrastructure that these big brands and big organizations have to contend with, you're then faced with that. Lots of smart people can see the potential and the need to have a much more customer-centric, experiential approach. But going back to my point earlier, you know, they're very constrained by a multiplicity of different systems, and it just feels very difficult to get started. And within that, lots of smart people who are focused on how to make this fantastic rather than just focusing on how they can get started and get better than from where they are at the moment and build that kind of case for continuing investment over time.
I think also on that point about continuing investment, it's also about continuous change and continuous evolution. I think people like to think of you transform, and once it's done, it's done. And it's like, no, when you're talking about customer experience transformation, you're talking about something that will essentially never end. Because once you start the path, you are constantly having to run and discoveries. You're constantly having to look and learn at what's happening to the market because everything's changing so quickly that you have to be able to keep up with it. So you have to be able to adapt. You can't have everything pre-planned and say, right, once we've ticked these five boxes, we've done. Because actually, that's not the case, because you'll do the first box, learn from the first box and go, the second box isn't relevant anymore. We now need to go somewhere else. And it's that ability for people not to be focused on the thing you're going to do, but the outcome that you seek, and that mindset that once you start, you never end, I think is also quite daunting to people.
But do you think that everyone even kind of realizes that? Because you spoke about transformation fatigue a moment ago, Sarah. I think sometimes there is this idea in the big companies, it's a, oh, we've fallen behind again, or our competitor's done this. It's time for another transformation program. Exactly as you say, that then somehow once we finish that in 9 months, we're going to be back ahead and then it's fine, mm-hmm. as opposed to recognizing, no, we need to stay ahead. I doubt Amazon or Facebook are ever going to come to us and say, can you help us transform, please? They're never going to get to that state that they're not an adaptable business that's constantly kind of moving forward and thinking about what's new. So, yeah, I think it's a really key thing, getting not having that adaptable mindset, not getting yourself in a position that you can be more adaptable, means that you can always going to be falling behind again, rather than leading and changing how things are moving in your industry.
And again, I think one of the big enemies of that is that fear. And you know, Sarah's referenced, you know, where have there been previous kind of organizational changes, transformations, etc., and that fatigue. But there's also that fear of disruption. The fear in the individual of is this going to be the time that I lose my job, and therefore it becomes more of a protective state. We're more concerned with making sure that you don't kind of lose your own job, you don't necessarily make things worse, rather than focusing on one, the opportunity cost of not changing and transforming, and two, really being bold and looking for where the big opportunities are and where you actually need to be changing as an organization.
I remember global client, and maybe the global initiative saw the need for transformation, but then one of the local markets, the chief marketing officer was really quite happy with things the way they were, because he always hit his targets, you know. He was achieving what he was being asked to set out to achieve. And why then change that? Why disrupt that? Maybe then he's not going to hit his targets anymore. But it's kind of come back to, are those targets the right one? Because could he be achieving more by changing than he was now? And I think particularly the realization of many companies in certain sectors is the trend is downwards at the moment. And so what, do you just want to kind of keep minimizing the shrinkage? When's it kind of the point of pivoting and moving away? But, you know, you set up your business to meet a customer need to do a certain thing. Sometimes the world changes around you, and being big isn't kind of the reason to let it fall behind. We work with a lot of telco companies, and one of our clients, when you go into the head office, there's like a lovely display of kind of mobile telephony through the years. And I remember the first time I looked at that, I was like, oh yeah, I used to have one of those phones. But one of the starkest thing in there is how much of the early years was dominated by Nokia. Nokia used to sell over 1 million handsets a week. Like, no one compares to those numbers nowadays. But now they're not even no one has a Nokia handset anymore, because they were one of the people that didn't catch up with the smartphone revolution that Samsung and Apple led. So sometimes the kind of the world changes around you. And back to my point earlier, you know, we reference companies like Harry's Razor that come in, and yes, they're offering one product, so it's a more simple world to offer a great customer experience in, but they really are offering a great customer experience, and that affects anyone in the kind of the consumer packaged goods in the retail space, because customers' expectations of how we deliver stuff to them is changing, and we need to catch up with that.
Absolutely right, Mark. And I think I think recent client that I've been working with, I think whilst there's a really clear focus on why they need to change, where they needed and continue to need the most help is in terms of focusing on the priorities across a roadmap which is focused on delivering value, building credibility, building confidence in the change, building evangelists in the change, and then taking it forward. And Sarah said earlier, not having such a set roadmap that you become fixated, and then, you know, again, it can become that kind of that ever focus on the next milestone and making sure you're hitting that, et cetera, but much more focus on let's make sure that we're delivering value, that we're continuing to move in the direction that we know that we need to. But again, this particular client also, certainly from the early conversations, were hampered or constrained by, we did an organizational change only 18 months ago. We don't want to do that to our people again. We need to minimize any disruption. Whereas actually what they need is arguably a wholesale change with a really clearly articulated rationale for that, and kind of plan and how they're going to progress and take people through that. Again, of course, that's something that we can help with.
And it has been proven that more adaptable businesses that have a more agile mindset generally have happier and more productive teams that then stay around for longer. And if you can get the cultural aspects right, it can really affect your bottom line, your adjusted operating income, from having those happier staff with better retention, less attrition, less hiring costs, less training costs. So again, it's not the seeing it as disrupting the teams, it's seeing as to how to plot them on a new course where they're always kind of finding the best way of doing stuff. I want to come back to this idea of opportunity cost, because I think this is really kind of the nub of what we're trying to get to. I remember presenting to a client once a solution that we believed could generate them somewhere around an extra £5 million worth of incremental revenue a month. It took that client 18 months to make a decision to go ahead with actually implementing this solution. So they did eventually agree and realize it was the best solution. So not saying here that we presented them something that wasn't going to work. They eventually saw it would work, but having to point out to them that, great, you're doing it now, but 18 months at £5 million, you know, that's £90 million you could have made by making this decision sooner. And it doesn't reflect on the balance sheet in the same way. There isn't a balance sheet line for opportunity cost, which is why I think this is so hard to kind of prove sometimes. There's a leap of faith that's needed to say we can do better than today by changing the way we're thinking and acting. And I guess it kind of comes into that idea of loss theory. You know, I think it's been proven that if you were to take £20 away from someone, the emotional consequence of that is more than double that of them having the opportunity to gain £20 and not having done it. So we protect what's already there far more than we look for the opportunity of what could we be doing more and doing better of. And so I guess it's how do we start helping people discover that insight that by doing something differently today, they could be making more revenue, drive better customer satisfaction, have a better adjusting operating income than they do right now.
Absolutely. Mark, I mean, I've worked in an organization previously where, again a big organization, and the usual kind of challenges with making big investment decisions. So again, when it ends up being a big investment decision, then it takes longer for that organization to go through the processes to get the buy-in and to get the justification together on top of the business as usual, etc. And there isn't necessarily, again, that sort of focus around what might we be losing by taking time to do this. Often the business case that gets kind of built out is focused on the most obvious, the piece above the waterline that the investment, you know, needs to pay for, the technology, the data, whatever it might be, and then forgets some of the other costs associated with getting yourselves organized to use that technology in the right way. And then you end up on a kind of a track of, now we understand a bit more. Now we need to add a bit more to this potential investment and how we justify that. And time goes by, everyone doing it as a side of desk exercise, rather than, you know, having that real clarity around right from the outset of what is the big opportunity, what is the big drive for change, and why do we need to, what's the value associated, but at the same time, what happens if we don't? And then having got that clarity is then breaking it into chunks and saying, right, well, how do we get started? And how do we start delivering some value early? And that's what we did in the team that I was leading at the time, was really focused on something that we were doing at the time that drove value, but we knew it was way short of what our customers expected and the value that we could generate for the organization. And was therefore using that kind of that business case on a plate to start saying, right, how can we get started quickly? It doesn't have to be perfect. We don't need to have all of the data. We don't need to have the most wonderful customer experience. It just needs to be better than what we've got. And as a result of that, we delivered value over 60 days, which was the first value against the bigger investment, which then built our case to start expanding that out across the organization as a whole.
I think also there's something around people having credibility, people having done it before, and therefore standing there and saying, I've done this before. This isn't theoretical. I've got the credibility behind me that I've done this in another organization. Therefore, I know how to do it and I know that this works. And I think when we talk about agility, we talk about realizing things at speed, we have to temper that with, it has to be quality. You have to make sure that whatever you do build has quality at its heart. So even if it's a small incremental change, it's been built well, because if it hasn't been built well and thought through at least to some degree, it's going to slow you down in the future. So it's kind of this, when people talk about agile with a big A with regard to sort of technical delivery, there's always a statement around, we deliver faster. And the second part is because we only deliver the things that have value. Yeah. But underpinning Agile, and everyone forgets it, is the quality. So it's not just the speed of delivery, it's the quality. Because by focusing on the quality, you get the speed, you get the efficiency, you get the value. But if you focus on the value and the speed to start with, and you don't notice the quality slips, and it will, pardon the expression, bite you in the arse later. And that's quite a hard conversation to have, because often when you're talking about quality, you will often have to do something in a slightly slower way than it could be done if you didn't care about the quality. And that can then be a difficult conversation. And that's where having the credibility of, I've done this before, and I understand, and I know that I might have to go slower for a bit, but by going slower for a bit, I will get to be faster a lot quicker, and I will deliver a lot more value. So it's almost kind of learning short-term pain for long-term gain, which is very difficult. Yeah.
Talking of short-term pain for long-term gain, I remember another one of our telco clients, a mindset shift in their business. So every time a customer comes to renew their post-pay contract, so I've got to the end of my 18 or 24 month contract, there would be a retention program to then try and get them to sign up to the new thing, maybe upgrade. And as a point of principle, the customer was never offered less than they were currently on. It was always as a minimum what they're currently on, if not an upgrade. And anything that wasn't an upgrade was actually seen as a loss in average revenue per user, because I've just gone from £30 a month to 25. Growth comes from getting them from 30 to 35 to 40. And this company actually had a hypothesis that doing what was best for the customer would pay back in the long term. So they removed this restriction on the next best actions they could give to the customer. And it now became an option to say, all right, that customer's on a £40 a month thing at the minute, but they never use even half their data allowance. They're never using all of their minutes or whatever. Would they be better on a smaller contract because it's more suitable to their needs? So they did this, and there was about 3 months of pain, obviously, because their average revenue per user did drop because they were now trading customers down from one contract to a lower. But I think it only took 18 months before they'd seen their retention rate increase massively. And then their ability to cross-sell and increase the product holding of cost customers go up. So after 18 months, the average revenue per user had actually reversed and gone up because of the mix of customers and their retention and the product holdings that they have being better. And so it's that, again, it was that leap of faith, be willing to test the hypothesis. And it meant that they broke the ceiling with which they were acting in today.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Mark. I've had that argument numerous times about just being clear on how are you measuring value, how are you measuring the potential, and it's that classic piece of thinking of all customers as sort of an average, and therefore anyone that's bringing less value than the average, you need to do something to, you need to grow the value, rather than having a much more data and insight driven focus, which is understanding that, you know, customers have different needs, they have different appetites and budgets to buy, and when you recognize that and you've got an organization that kind of has customer first as part of their kind of core ethos, if you like, then certainly one of the clients I've worked with before, what we did was exactly that situation, but in a different market, was starting to unbundle packages so that actually you could have and the agents on the phones could have their conversations, which were much more focused on you coming up for renewal, but actually, what are your needs? Because I can potentially put together a package for you, or unbundle the whole package, which is much more closely focused to your needs. You're getting the value you need. So that classic value exchange discussion, you're getting the value that you need. You're more likely to stay with us for the longer term as a result. You build a relationship that feels more like this is an organization as a customer that I can work with as a kind of trusted advisor, that they're not trying to squeeze more money out of me every year. They're just trying to give me value for my money. And those customers of course, that old cliche, they go on and tell other customers.
And you can't do any of that without a customer strategy, without some adaptability in your organization, without the measurement telling you that it might work, and without the kind of autonomy and freedom to act in teams to actually say, do you know what, this is something I want to try. If it's all kind of command, control, hierarchy, business as usual, you'll never get that innovation of thought and that testing and that learning and that kind of improvement. I think most of the clients that are coming to us at the minute actually need help changing the mindset to customer first. So it's away from having grown up in product groups or in channel optimization to now what's right for our customer. And, you know, this is where we start talking to them about agile and cross-functional teams and reconfigurable adaptable models and autonomy within squads and chapters and so on. Again, this is where I see the huge opportunity cost come in, because perfection, very much the enemy of progress. People want to sit down and plan out exactly what that transformation is going to look like for the next year. And I've seen clients still discussing 6 months later what the purpose of the squads should be. And it's like, just pick something and get going. So, you know, if a client came to us and said, how should I arrange my cross-functional teams? What purpose should I give? We would advocate some form of customer-based approach, find, win, keep, grow. It's not the only way of doing it. And we've had clients that have done it in a way that's kind of stayed closer to their existing product or their segment groups with a bit of an evolution towards customer, because that made sense to what was going on in their wider business right now. And they still got huge gains by moving to a more cross-functional and a more agile mindset, and it was more data-driven and more adaptable. And yes, 9-12 months later, they were getting all of the gains that they could get, and then they were wrestling with their customer experience ceiling of going, thing is, customer still gets two quite disjointed communications between our two cross-functional teams. So then pivot. It's reconfigurable. Move then. Don't not make any progress for those first 12 months because you've not been able to agree what kind of the purpose was. There needs to sometimes just be that commitment to kind of get going and make some progress.
So having worked client side and been through one of these transformations and seen it done exactly the way that you're talking about, where there was enough thought went into how the area should be structured, and then they took a bold move, they restructured it, and they let people work it out for themselves. So not every process was buttoned down. Some responsibilities and accountabilities weren't clear. There was just enough. And what you saw was people self-organizing. What you saw was the autonomy. And people struggled with it because some people weren't used to it. People were coming from outside. There was a real clash of the external culture to the culture within this particular unit. But there was a real focus on that culture, that autonomy, that empowerment, that enablement, allowing people to come up with the ideas themselves and being clear on, here are the outcomes that you guys need to deliver. You are the best placed people to work out how to work together to do it. And it was all in cross-functional teams, and people were empowered to make those decisions, to work out how they worked. And the ideas that came up were incredible. And they were coming from everybody in the teams. It didn't matter who was doing the role. And actually, some of the best ideas came from developers who in a previous incarnation wouldn't have been even given a look in at coming up with ideas for how you might want to meet an opportunity or address a particular problem. And the beauty was, it wasn't, they hadn't spent years and years and years planning it. They worked out what the end vision was and where they wanted to get to. They worked out a logical first step. They did just enough. They stood everything up and they let it run. And they said, we will evolve this over time. This isn't a finished article. And when, you know, they were badly impacted by COVID, and during that they were able to pivot because they had people who could pivot, and they will be constantly pivoting and tweaking. And everybody knows that's just what happens, because it has to, because that's what's happening in an ever-changing world. But they've kind of built those foundations and created that culture. And it was a real focus on people, ways of working, behaviors and mindset, with just enough process to give people enough to hang things off. But actually, as it evolves, there really isn't any documented process because there doesn't need to be, because everybody works together. And if people don't know or they need to find something out, everybody talks, but it's still a team of 100 people, but it works. So it's definitely possible.
Absolutely. There's kind of one big point I did want to make at the end, given that our title is The Cost of Not Transforming, and it's an observation. We've talked a lot about people and teams and mindsets. One of the things we haven't particularly talked about is technology. And obviously, as a Merkle, we help lots of clients implement new enterprise technology. Technology is a huge part of actually delivering a better customer experience. I've seen time and time again the cost of not transforming being not getting the investment out of the technology that you've then purchased. Because if you just plug in the shiny new toy and expect it to magically change everything, I'm afraid you've got a kind of a hard realization in front of you. And often far less expensive and far less burdensome is the idea of trying to get your teams to think in a different way and recognizing that maybe some new governance and maybe new some processes and maybe a slightly evolved customer strategy is needed to get the money out of the many millions of pounds that you might be spending on enterprise technology. So I've said to one of my clients recently who's going through a big tech transformation, and they've said, when should we start thinking about the ways of working bit? And I said to them, you won't get the value out of your technology without the ways of working, but you'll start to get value out of your ways of working even before the technology comes in. So I think it's never too early to start thinking about how you want to kind of change mindsets and strategies.
So the transformation I was talking about that I experienced when I was client side, they transformed the ways of working before they transformed the technology, and they saw huge gains in doing that. A lot of the pain they experienced was the frustration that the underlying technology couldn't get them where they wanted to go fast enough. But they absolutely saw benefits by transforming the way they worked in advance of that. And by doing that, it then gives you a better idea of what you want that technology to do going forward. So then when you build that technology stack out, you build it for the future. You don't build it for the past.
I hope that was an interesting discussion for everyone listening. Thank you for joining us and enjoy your day.
Thanks to all our listeners for joining today's episode of Connected. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. Remember to subscribe, and you can check out our website for more information on any of the topics we discuss at merkelink.com. We look forward to you joining us next time. Catch you soon.